Hello, this is Pennsylvania State Senator Gene Yaw of the 23rd Senate District, and I want to welcome you to this live special telephone town hall meeting on heroin and opioid addiction. We are calling you live from the State Capitol building in Harrisburg to discuss this very important subject, something that has touched each and every one of us, whether personally, professionally, or from an economic perspective. This is the third in a series of telephone town halls that your legislators have been having in order to bring the issue of heroin and opioid addiction to you. To ask a question at any time during this call, please be sure to press *3 on your phone. These telephone town halls are extremely important because they offer you and your elected officials a direct line of communication. Tonight, we have assembled a panel of experts who are joining me in the studio to discuss this growing epidemic. As I said, tonight's telephone town hall is unique in that it will focus on one key subject area, heroin and opioid addiction in the southeast region of Pennsylvania. Tonight's telephone town hall is being sponsored by area state senators that include Senator Pat Brown, Senator Stuart Greenleaf, Senator Tom Killian, Senator Bob Mensch, Senator Tom McGarrigle, Senator Chuck McElhenney, Senator John Rafferty, Senator Tommy Tomlinson. This town hall will allow you to listen in, offer your opinions, and even ask questions from your own home. Once again, to ask a question at any time during this call, be sure to press *3 on your phone. Reports have indicated that approximately 80% of heroin addicts trace their addiction back to prescription opioids. Further, a Center for Disease Control and Prevention Vital Signs report confirmed that healthcare providers wrote 259 million prescriptions for painkillers in 2012, enough for every adult in the U.S. to have a bottle of prescription painkillers. From 2014, the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, a legislative research agency of the General Assembly, of which I serve as chairman, has conducted 12 public hearings on the heroin epidemic, which has now taken center stage on the local, state, and national levels. Before we meet our panel of experts, joining me in the studio, I again would like to thank our area state senators for sponsoring tonight's telephone town hall event, who represent you across southeastern Pennsylvania. They are Senator Pat Brown, Senator Stuart Greenleaf, Senator Tom Killian, Senator Bob Mensch, Senator Tom McGarrigle, Senator Chuck McElhenney, Senator John Rafferty, Senator Tommy Tomlinson. With me in the studio to discuss the subject of heroin and opioid addiction are our special guests for tonight, Pennsylvania's Physician General, Dr. Rachel Levine, Delaware County District Attorney Jack Whalen, and Barry Dank of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. If for any reason you are disconnected, you can also stream this conversation online by visiting www.acommonwealthcrisis.com. That's www.acommonwealthcrisis.com. The first question we have is, how do I know if someone is using heroin or an opioid? Dr. Levine.
Thank you very much for that question, and I'm very pleased to be here. Signs of an addiction would be loss of focus and concentration in usual activities that might be work or family or participation in different activities. The person might have medical problems. They might have significant fatigue. So sometimes it can be very subtle. But those type of things is something you would look for in a loved one. For young people who might suffer from addiction, you might see falling grades in school, lack of participation in normal activities, and particularly irritability would be something to look for in a young person.
Thank you. We have John on the line. John, you have a question.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to comment on the proclamation by Governor Wolf that occurred earlier in this year, removing and restricting people from prescription opioid painkillers. And that my wife has multiple sclerosis and was diagnosed in 2001. It took several years for the medical community to diagnose her. and then took about 3 years after she was diagnosed for her neurologist to come up with a drug therapy that worked for her. It included an opioid painkiller. And while she was on that opioid painkiller, although she was not able to live a normal lifestyle, she was able to live a relatively comfortable lifestyle in that she was able to walk through the house, cook on her own, feed herself, and be left alone in the house, and able to drive and enjoy the company of her, our children and our grandchildren. Since the governor's proclamation, her neurologist told her that she was no longer he was no longer able to prescribe this opioid painkiller for her, and was taken off of it, and went through cold turkey withdrawal, and now is no longer on the painkiller, is completely bedridden, unable to walk even the 12 feet from her bed to the bathroom without the assistance of a walker, cannot drive, cannot cook for herself, cannot be left alone, and cannot feed herself. Someone has to be with her all the time. On top of that, you know, I had to take off a lot of time in order to care for her in this very vulnerable economy that's in the tank. All of my customer base has moved their manufacturing offshore. And it was very vulnerable, as I say. My productivity went down, and I have since received layoff notice because of it. Now I find myself in a position where my wife is bedridden, I'm without a job, and I'm unsure how to provide quality health care to her, potentially.
Okay, thank you. I'll ask Dr. Levine to answer the main part of your question, which was about the governor's proclamation.
Thank you for your question. I'm so sorry that your wife is suffering and having difficulty with her condition, and that it's impacted her life and your life so severely. I respectfully submit, however, that there was no proclamation from the governor that physicians could not prescribe opioid pain medications. We are recommending that physicians use opioid pain medications very carefully and judiciously, but it is clear that there are patients with chronic pain that do need opioids. So we have worked on prescribing guidelines. We have instituted the prescription drug monitoring program where when a prescription is written, when the pharmacist dispenses that goes into the database, and we can track prescriptions. But there is no proclamation and there is no law prohibiting physicians from writing opioids. Opioids are essential medications for doctors to use for acute pain if someone breaks their leg or had an operation today, or patients that have certain types of chronic pain. So we want physicians to use them very carefully and judiciously, but they are not prohibited in the state. I would respectfully, I don't know, you know, your, of course, your wife's medical history in detail, but that you speak with the neurologist if she's doing poorly, or you seek potentially a second opinion, because there is no proclamation or law prohibiting the use of these medicines. We're just providing guidelines for physicians to use.
We have Kathy on the line who has a question. Kathy, what's your question?
I was just curious, because you hear a lot about the drugs on the streets. It seems like more people who are addicted to the drugs that are using it are put in jail, as opposed to the dealers. They're still out there, and I'm sure that they're not that hard or difficult to catch. It seems like the people who are addicted and have problems are put in jail, but there's not many dealers. They're still on the streets.
Well, I'm going to ask Mr. Whalen, the district attorney in Delaware County, to address that question.
Well, thank you, Senator Yaw. Thank you for inviting me here this evening. We in the district attorney's office, and I can speak to my colleagues across the state, that drug dealers are a concern to all of us. We take a very aggressive prosecution as it relates to drug dealers. We understand certainly the difference between a person that's addicted and is charged with the misdemeanor crime of possession or paraphernalia or both, and a drug dealer. They are treated much more harsh in the criminal justice system than an individual that is in possession. And where there is an aggressive approach in the Southeast as well as across the state to have more counties have drug treatment courts. Many of the people that are addicted are placed in the drug treatment courts. And I can say in Delaware County, the success rate is approximately 80% that those who successfully complete drug treatment court. And there's also first offenders programs where they receive treatment. So treatment is a big part of the criminal justice system, as well as relating to individuals that may just need the help by getting them into other areas that provide for treatment, such as the Center for Excellence that may provide that treatment.
Thank you. I'm going to ask, we have Stanley on the phone who also has a question. Stanley, what's your question?
Well, it's a double question. The first question is what is the penalty for a distributor that is caught?
Okay, I'm going to ask Mr. Whalen to take a shot at that also.
Sure, that'll vary. The penalties for someone caught with possession with intent to deliver or actual delivery will vary based on the drug. It's, for example, it would be less for marijuana than it would be for heroin or cocaine. And it's now based on the sentencing guidelines in the state of Pennsylvania. Previously, the minimum mandatory laws that were previously in effect have been ruled by the court as unconstitutional. There is some pending legislation that your legislators are looking at to address whether or not minimum mandatories would come back into effect as it relates to drug offenses. However, I can say that in most of the counties in Pennsylvania, including Delaware County, if a person is caught with sufficient quantities of illegal drugs and they're charged with possession with intent to deliver or actual delivery of a controlled substance, they are doing significant time in jail. Some will do years in the state penitentiary, while others may only do, for example, in marijuana cases, 3 to 6 months for selling marijuana. But we treat more serious drugs like heroin much more sternly than marijuana.
We have Ed on the line. Ed, what's your question?
Oh, okay. I was just wondering what the state might want to do to support the use of non-traditional types of therapies like acupuncture, massage therapy as an alternative for treating pain.
Okay. Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask the physician general to answer that question.
So I agree with you. I think that it's very important as we work on alternatives to opioids for patients with chronic pain that we do look at lots of different options, and that includes such things as physical therapy, occupational therapy, you mentioned acupuncture, you can mention massage, cognitive behavioral therapy, and others. So we are actually going to be writing chronic pain guidelines that include alternatives to opioid pain medication to discuss those recommendations. We do need to work on, if possible, on insurance coverage for those types of alternative methods of treating chronic pain. So I agree with you. They're very important.
We have Ruby on the line. Ruby?
I just have a question and probably a statement too. There's a lot of babies that are born addicted to the Suboxone and the methadone that is being out in place of the heroin when they're addicted. And then the babies are born addicted, and then it ends up that CYS usually steps in and takes the children because the person on addiction isn't capable of caring for their children. And it's a very big epidemic in Fayette County that this is happening, and I'd just like to know how the government is going to proceed to take care of these children that are placed in service into foster care, because I don't believe that Suboxone and methadone is a cure for addiction. It just, and I don't mean one baby they have. They have 5, 6, 13.
Thank you for your question. I'll ask Dr. Levine or Jack Whalen to either of you take a shot at that.
Well, I'll handle the medical aspect. You are correct. There is a significant incidence of neonatal abstinence syndrome, or NAS, as a result of the opioid crisis. So actually, the treatment recommendations for a pregnant woman who is addicted to opioids, such as something like heroin, includes using either methadone or Suboxone. It can be dangerous to have the mother withdraw during pregnancy. So we actually published this summer treatment recommendations for the addicted pregnant woman, which were devised by obstetrics and gynecology experts from throughout the state. And they do include using either methadone or Suboxone. You're right, those babies will need specialized care in the neonatal intensive care unit, but they actually do better if the mother's been on those medicines than if she was acutely withdrawn from all opioids, or, of course, if she's on heroin. So in terms of the Department of Human Services and Children and Youth Services, so not all of those babies are withdrawn from the home. Certainly the family will be monitored for the health and safety of the mother and the baby, but they're not all taken away. The Centers of Excellence that DHS is sponsoring include OBGYN in neonatal centers of excellence, such as at McGee Women's Hospital in Pittsburgh, and they have an excellent program where they include medication-assisted treatment for the pregnant woman, but also includes counseling and very close follow-up in what's called wraparound services for the mother. After the baby is born, those services continue until services in the community can be developed.
This is Barry Dank from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. I will say at a couple of our public hearings, we heard from grandparents who are now raising their grandchildren because the parent is incarcerated in treatment or has left the area. So we recognize that as an issue because there are legal implications regarding medical care, school records, et cetera, et cetera. So it's something the center's looking at. I do believe it will be the basis for another public hearing that we may be holding in 2017. So it is recognized as an issue about the parent being removed from the home for some reason, and somebody has to step in. As Dr. Levine indicated, it's not always children and youth. Sometimes it's another family member, and there are challenges that obviously they have to address as well.
Thank you. Remember, *3 to dial in. We have Beverly on the line from Delaware County. Beverly?
Hi. How are you? I'm a registered nurse. I work in the outpatient setting, and I see on occasion physicians that overprescribe or inappropriately prescribe narcotics for patients. And outside of talking to the doctors about it and letting them know the symptoms that they're, you know, obviously not oriented or somnolent or whatever. Is there any legislative consideration to mandate us to report to anybody about this? We're mandated to report it for other instances.
Beverly, that's a great question. I don't know of anything, but I will ask the Dr. Levine and Jack Whalen what their thoughts are.
So in terms of the medical aspects, I mean, I think that you're entirely correct. I think that that physicians and other healthcare providers have been at times overprescribing opioids for acute pain and for chronic pain. And we have to bend the curve on those prescriptions. And so we're working very hard throughout the administration and with the legislature on that. First, we are developing guidelines for prescribing pain medications and opioid pain medications. We do have emergency department guidelines. We have many other guidelines as well. Those have all been taken to the respective professional boards, such as the Board of Medicine, for their affirmation and acceptance as well. Now we have the prescription drug monitoring program where all of those prescriptions are being monitored and tracked as well. And in terms of the emergency department, the legislature passed excellent legislation, which the governor signed, which limits the number of the prescriptions from the emergency department to 7 days. So the general term that I'm using for this is opioid stewardship, that opioids are necessary for certain types of acute or chronic pain, but we have to use medical professionals have to use opioids much more carefully and judiciously.
And I agree with Dr. Levine that the prescription drug monitoring program will help. But I can also tell you that in Delaware County, just in recent years, we've investigated a number of doctors. Three doctors were brought to criminal prosecution for illegal prescriptions involving opioids. The last doctor received 10 to 20 years in the state penitentiary as a result of the way he was prescribing opioids and the lives that he ruined as a result of this devastating effect. So it is being looked at, and it'll probably be looked at more as we proceed. But most of the doctors, let me say, here in this great Commonwealth are good doctors that do not abuse their privileges.
We have John on the line from Montgomery.
I have a question here for you. My son is a heroin addict. He's been in his fourth rehab. And the question is, he had student loans through the state, and his one loan was for $3,000. He had it down to under $1,000. But since he became addicted to heroin and lost his job and he's been on the streets, that bill has doubled over $6,000. And I was wondering if there's anything the state can do to limit or limit how much they can charge for interest or double or anything to help with the situation.
Thank you for your question. I'll throw this open to anybody on the panel who wants to try and answer it. That's a really interesting question.
Well, my concern right away is that we need to get your child the help that your child needs. I mean, I'm not concerned about his loan. He probably doesn't own any assets. Typically, the state's not going to turn around and sue him. You can work on dealing with the creditors that your son may owe at a later time. What we like to see is trying to get your son convinced that he needs help, get him into a rehabilitation, and make sure that he's getting the treatment that he needs. I'm really worried about him, and I'm really concerned that you could lose him if we don't intervene soon.
So I do want, this is Rachel Levine, I do want to mention, if you go to the Department of Drug and Alcohol Program website, ddap.pa.gov, there's a phone number where you can find Drug and Alcohol Treatment Services. That phone number is 1-800-662-4357. Again, 1-800-662-4357. Another option is to call the Single County Authority that helps organize and coordinate substance abuse treatment in your county. But I agree that with the district attorney that it's critically important to get life-saving treatment. And now, if I might say, is that you might want to consider getting naloxone, the antidote to overdoses, so you have it at your home. So in case of the unfortunate situation, if someone overdoses, if you have, for instance, nasal naloxone, you could perform a resuscitation and then call 911 to get your son to the emergency department.
Yeah, I would just reinforce that your son's recovery is the top priority, but I'm not sure if you've contacted FIA or the lending agency, whether it was a private bank, and just talk with them about the situation and see if they can hold an abatement, the repayments, or some minimal amount. I would have some conversation with the lending agency about that side of it. But again, the priority is your son and getting him into a treatment system.
We've had 12 hearings on this subject, as I indicated at the beginning, and Barry Dank, the executive director of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, has been involved in all of those. And I know one of the questions that came in online from Don is, what are we doing to coordinate efforts with our schools beyond just saying no, and what are we doing to help people expelled from schools, that type of thing. So, Barry, what have we heard about our programs in Pennsylvania, especially our drug programs, over the last 2.5 years?
Obviously, the schools are very heavily engaged, and I will say particularly in rural areas, oftentimes the school district is the focal point of much community and social activity, and we heard from a number of school superintendents, not all rural, some of them were urban, suburban, where they've implemented some very aggressive education programs. Some schools still continue with their student assistance programs, and they've supported them. They have volunteers coming in. Dr. Levine mentioned the single county authorities. They do education and prevention programs. So the school districts have linked up with existing resources. We have heard a number of people indicate that they think schools should be doing more. it certainly is an issue that schools, I think, need to address. But I also think that with our younger audience, so many others can get involved in this issue and take ownership. Kiwanis clubs, Rotary's clubs, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, even the churches. I think the more that communities get involved with our young folk from an education prevention standpoint, we can really turn the tide about attitudes and behaviors people have towards substance abuse.
So this is Rachel Levine. I do want to emphasize that the legislature passed excellent legislation last term, signed by the governor, that limits opioid prescriptions to young people to 1 week. In addition, we are actually at the Department of Health working on pediatric and adolescent pain guidelines that should be out later this spring, again, to better educate physicians about this topic.
And I would also add, this is Jack Whalen, District Attorney, that, for example, in Delaware County, there's 15 separate school districts. We've been able to talk to the superintendents. I think they all recognize the fact that heroin and opioid addiction is a problem, not only in Delaware County, certainly, but statewide and nationally. And we were able, through our heroin task force, to partner with the NOPE group out of Florida. And NOPE now does presentations in all of our school districts. It's expanded now in Montgomery and Chester County. And if you haven't heard about NOPE, I would invite you to look them up. And I think they perform a very powerful presentation, not only to the students in assembly, but also they have programs for the parents in the evening.
We have Milo online from Bucks County. What's your question?
Good evening, Senator Metz. Thank you for holding this town hall. My question revolves more around the civic aspects of drug abuse and the negative effects that it can have on communities and neighborhoods. What can neighbors do, your average citizen, if they suspect that there's drug activity going on? How can we educate neighbors to be able to spot when drug activity is going on, so that our neighborhoods don't deteriorate?
All right. Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask Mary Denk from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania to answer that because we've been involved for, as I said, 2.5 years in having hearings across the state.
Sure. I mean, first of all, if you suspect illegal activity with drug sales, I would certainly get in touch with law enforcement and make them aware of the situation. The other thing is a preventive measure. I think households can be much more aware of drugs in their home, drugs that have been prescribed that have not been used. We see that oftentimes with older adults where a prescription's been provided and it doesn't work quite well and they still have half or three quarters of that supply left. Getting rid of those drugs in the homes that are not being used, getting them to the drug take back boxes that are now across the Commonwealth, even locking up medicine chest. We asked the question in a couple of our seminars, how many people have guns in their home? And then we say, how many of you keep them locked up in your home? And all the hands go up. We ask, how many people have medication in your home, opioids, prescription meds? And we ask, how many of you keep them locked up? And the hands do not get raised up. I think we really need to be aware of the powerful impact that these opioids and drugs have, particularly with older adults who are unaware, unknowing. Even a family member can come in and take them, or a stranger can get in the house and take those meds. I think that is one very simple but very good way to try to cut back on the availability of drugs and to get more people involved in this issue and to become more aware and more engaged.
This is Dr. Rachel Levine. One thing that's very important is for municipal police as well as the Pennsylvania State Police to carry naloxone. Naloxone is, again, an antidote to an opioid overdose, whether it's a prescription opioid or heroin. It's a life-saving medication. It comes as a nasal spray. And so we have certainly encouraged municipal police departments to carry naloxone. If they come across someone who's overdosed, often they are the first responder. They can use the nasal spray, revive the person, and then have emergency services bring the patient to the emergency department for further medical treatment and a referral for drug treatment. If your municipality and your police department does not carry naloxone, then I would call them up and ask them why, because it's a nasal spray, it has no side effects, and it can save a life.
And I would simply add to that, this is Jack Whalen, district attorney. You have a great district attorney of Bucks County, new appointee, Matthew Weintraub. He's doing a heck of a job there. We've talked about some of the drug problems that affect southeastern Pennsylvania. Many of our counties have drug task force that go out with undercover officers to enforce the drug laws. So if you see suspicious activity, if you believe that something's happening inappropriately, please contact your local police department or contact the office of the district attorney. In your case, it would be Matt in Bucks County.
We have Elaine on the line from Delaware County. Elaine.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for holding this conference. I think partially my question was answered, but I'll ask it again. I was wondering from a public health point of view, I'm a student, an older student at Drexel University for behavior health and addictions. And I'm more concerned basically with prevention in schools, and somebody mentioned NOPE, and I'm looking that up right now, the prevention programs, and I think that's a wonderful idea, and I think more of, I would actually like to get involved with something like that on an educational basis in Delaware County, because I'm living in Newtown Square right now, but it's rampant. So if there's any more feedback on how to get involved and actually teaching these classes in school, how does one go about that?
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Elaine. Go ahead.
Well, I was one. I'm Jack Whalen, just your district attorney, and I had mentioned the NOPE program. It was set forth with our heroin task force. In Delaware County, we do have a very extensive heroin task force. It's formulated with legislators, doctors, community leaders. In fact, two of the legislators, Senator Killian, Senator McGarrigle, are part of the heroin task force. We also have a coalition of other people that meet. You could contact me in the district attorney's office, and I can certainly give you information pertaining to the NOPE program, as well as the great work that the heroin task force in Delaware County has done.
One thing which you also might consider, this is Senator Yaw, all of the school districts in my home county, there are 8 school districts, so it's very rural. Every one of the school districts has a policy about and carries naloxone, which I think is something that, that's virtually, it's going to be the defibrillator, I think, of the drug world, that virtually every public facility is going to carry that.
So that's organized through the Department of Health with a grant from Adapt Pharmaceuticals, which is a Pennsylvania company which makes the nasal naloxone, and they are donating a kit of 2 of the product to any public high school in Pennsylvania free. So the high school superintendent has to agree, the school physician has to agree. They write policies and procedures, and through the Department of Health, we will make sure that the school gets the naloxone. You might think that no one would ever overdose in a public high school in Pennsylvania, but at least twice last year, in 2015, there were overdoses in a high school. If the high school has naloxone, those children can be saved.
We have Bernadette on the line from Franklin County.
Hi. First, I'd like to say thanks for having this forum. I've been trying to speak in public for a long time. I've been doing interventions in Franklin County for 11 years. We've come up against the wall here because we don't have anywhere to put these people. We have no rehabilitation available other than one place. We have 7 to 10,000 people around the 4-state region that are addicted. We have to wait 10 to 14 days for a bed. The county would not listen to me, so I went above and beyond and went and got a certified recovery specialist title. I'm 2 weeks away from it, and if I need to open transitional housing, I can do that. But we need the resources and the help in our county. We have a good DA, a great DA, but it took him having to lose a family member to open his eyes of the county. and I have lost. There were 15 boys on a ball team in Quincy, Pennsylvania. 11 of them are dead from opiate overdoses. 2 were in a car accident and killed together, drunk. There are 2 left, and 1 of them are my son. We need all the help that we can get here in Franklin County for these people, because we're waiting 10 to 14 days for a bed wait, and they're dying. They're going to jail instead of treatment, and they're dying. We need help.
Thank you. I'd like to address part of your question and ask Barry Dank to address the certified recovery specialist and where we see them fitting in with what we've heard.
Sure. Again, we've heard testimony from a number of the single county authorities who have brought on board certified recovery specialists, and in fact, many of them are people in recovery themselves. And so they can clearly relate to the individual who's going through a substance disorder problem right now. That is a growing trend with the single county authorities around the state. There is money that's being made available for those, and they often play an intervention role where somebody overdoses, they've been revived, and they can talk to them and get them into treatment. Your point, though, however, is about availability of treatment facilities. And quite honestly, that remains a challenge, particularly in terms of detox beds, but also for long-term inpatient beds. May not be in the general area. Getting transportation is a challenge. It's a work in progress because this epidemic has taken on major proportions, and the resources that are available have been taxed considerably. But it is something that the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, Department of Health, Department of Human Services are clearly working on, and the new centers of excellence that are opening up around the state clearly will play a role in providing treatment services for individuals. So I think the gaps are being filled, but we acknowledge that treatment services, there's a greater demand right now than there is supply.
Thank you. There's a question online that we received from Nancy, and part of her question is, how can churches help? And one of the things that this is Senator Yaw that I've found out in all of our travels and the presentations we've heard is that faith-based programs are absolutely critical. I use this example all the time of a diabetic. You can't send a diabetic away for 30 days and they come back and they're fixed. It's a lifelong problem, and it's the same with addiction, which is a disease. The problem is lifelong, and the only way it can be faced is by the community getting together and putting all of their resources behind it, and very, very important is the faith-based programs and the churches.
Just to answer the previous person, there is a Center of Excellence being funded by the Department of Human Services in Franklin County. It's Pennsylvania Counseling Services Allison Hill at 75 South Main Street in Chambersburg in Franklin County. Phone number 717-228-9227.
Thank you. We have Chad on the line from Berks County. Chad, what's your question?
My question is, and thank you again for asking, but my question is, in the states that have already legalized marijuana, has the heroin epidemic dropped in those states? And if it has, why don't we proceed to legalize it in other states, especially states that have horrible heroin issues?
Thank you for your question. That's a great question. I'm going to ask Dr. Levine to address that issue.
So I can't comment in terms of, I don't have data for states that have legalized recreational marijuana, but for states that have medical marijuana, there has been shown to be a decrease in opioid prescriptions by physicians. It's not dramatic. But there has been shown to be a decrease in the amount of opioid prescriptions with the use of medical marijuana. As you know, the legislature last year passed medical marijuana, and that was signed by the governor. The Department of Health under Secretary Karen Murphy is working diligently on that program. I don't have a date when it's going to go live, but we're working through all the policies and procedures. And so we're hopeful that this will be one piece of the puzzle in terms of alternatives to opioids. I think it's important to have realistic expectations, however. We're not going to solve the opioid crisis with medical marijuana, but we're hopeful that it might be one piece of the puzzle by giving physicians an alternative to opioids for some patients with chronic pain.
We have Joe on the line from Chester County. Joe?
Hi, thanks. Thank you for having this. My question is this. If it's going to be a war on heroin, you have people that get addicted through painkillers. They move on to becoming true heroin addicts once they're denied the drug. They're now heroin addicts. They can't identify themselves. They hide in the community, and they die. And we need, in my mind, a complete program that says you can come to this. There's not anybody that's going to charge you $3,500 or $10,000. You're going to have treatment. You do not have to identify yourself as a heroin addict. And the only intervention that's going to save people is the type that works that way, the way Holland did it years ago, where they just said, okay, it's decriminalized to be a heroin addict. You come to us, and when you're ready to be taken off this drug, there is facilities and the ability to do that. And if you want to charge the drug companies that pushed it out initially, that would be fine too.
Thank you for your question. I don't know of any programs or anything currently underway to address this issue with the drug companies directly. Perhaps somewhere down the road that will come about. Dr. Levine?
Well, we don't have the option for free substance abuse treatment in Pennsylvania or any other state that I know of, but Medicaid has excellent coverage for substance abuse treatment. The governor did expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act so that many more people have insurance, and thus many more people have the option to get substance abuse treatment, whether it's rehabilitation treatment or medication-assisted treatment. It needs to be individualized to the patient. So certainly, almost all private insurance companies will cover substance abuse treatment. There are variations about how completely it's covered, but they do cover it. Medicaid covers it. And so I think the answer would be to get more and more people to make sure that they have health insurance, and that health insurance will cover the treatment. Would you like to comment, sir?
Well, I would only say that possession of a controlled substance without a doctor's prescription is certainly a crime. However, the status of being an addict is not a crime in any jurisdiction. So I would keep that in mind, and certainly we need to put more money into treatment to help people that are addicted.
This is Dr. Levine again. It might be a good time to mention the Good Samaritan Clause in Act 139, is that if someone is in the presence of someone that overdoses, say, on heroin, and they were using as well, if they call 911 and in good faith call and stay with the patient, the police will not arrest that person who has called so that their friend can be resuscitated.
Well, they are immune. Sometimes the police do arrest, but we then throw out the charges based on David's Law.
All right, thank you. We have Eileen from Bucks County on the phone.
I wanted to comment, one, that I work in an emergency room, and the Pennsylvania Department of Health Drug Monitoring Database is an excellent resource for us. Because
Thank you.
That come to the emergency room do not always tell us that they are taking pain medication or benzodiazepine medication. So it gives us a heads up on not giving medication to people who are already prescribed medicine. And the emergency rooms do not prescribe medicine to people who are getting it from their primary doctors. And the word has gotten out. People would come before just for refills, and they don't do that now. So I'm very thankful for that database. But my question was, what is being done to prevent heroin from being available, how it's coming into the country?
Certainly, this is Jack Whalen, District Attorney. We work with our federal and state partners. There's task force. We work with DEA. We get tips of drugs coming into the country. For example, in certain parts of Pennsylvania along the Southeast Corridor, you have Interstate 95, you have the Delaware River, you have air transport. So there's many different ways that people are trying to smuggle drugs up from the South. There's many ways that they can get it down from the North. But DEA does an incredible job in trying to enforce the interstate transportation of narcotics. Our federal partners are aware of that. In Delaware County, as well as other counties throughout the state of Pennsylvania, we have the Drug Task Force. In Delaware County, there's 60 undercover officers that are working with DEA, working with the Pennsylvania State Police, to try to apprehend those trafficking in drugs so that we bring them to justice.
This is Dr. Levine. You know, the Department of Health and other state agencies, such as the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, the Department of Human Services, you know, we work really closely with the Pennsylvania State Police. We have also collaborated with the DEA and the FBI, and as well as National Governors Association and federal partners. What all of the law enforcement experts that we have been told is that this, you know, it really has to be considered, in addition to a law enforcement issue, is a public health problem. It's kind of like freshman economics. It's supply and demand. If the demand is sky high, it's going to be very difficult to cut off the supply. So what we have to do is do all of the work that we're doing collaboratively and with the legislature and all of our stakeholders to work on the prescription drug problem, to work on heroin addiction, and to try to decrease the demand, and then our law enforcement partners will hopefully be more successful on the supply.
No doubt.
We have Leslie on the line from Chester County. Leslie?
We have so many addicts going to a methadone clinic every day for years and years. And my question is there a limit or how long they can go without harming themselves just from the methadone?
That's a good question. This is Senator Yaw. Thank you. I'll give you what I've learned and what I have been told, and then I'm going to ask Dr. Levine to give you the official word. I have several friends who are doctors, and I know one is very, very deeply involved in pain management and the whole problems arising out of drug addiction. And I know he told me he has patients that have been on methadone for 10 years. And the issue is that methadone, the difference between it and heroin is a person that is on methadone can be a functional member of society. They don't have the same cravings. It is a drug. There's no question. It's a replacement drug. But they can function. And the doctors that I've talked to, their opinion is that it's kind of a crutch, but it allows the person to become a productive member of society, be a family member, and have a decent life. So with that, Dr. Levine.
Thank you, Senator. Be honest with you, I think that you've articulated that very completely. I think that it's very important to emphasize that medication-assisted treatment can be extremely useful for patients suffering from opioid use disorder. You know, addiction is a medical illness. It's not a moral failing. And the treatment needs to be individualized. Some patients will do well with rehab and abstinence-based or drug-free treatment. Other patients with opioid use disorder will need medication-assisted treatment, and there are a number of different options, methadone, Suboxone, another one called Vivitrol. Methadone can be a very useful alternative, and it does save lives. As the senator said, that people can be very productive members of society in their home and in work taking methadone. The goal is never to have someone on the medication forever, and some patients can be successfully weaned from their methadone or, say, Suboxone, and then become drug-free. But there are other patients that, if they do that, they're going to relapse, they're going to go back to heroin and potentially die, and so they do stay on the medication long-term. I would characterize it more as a tool than a crutch, but I think the idea is correct from the senator, is that some people do need it long-term, and it can be life-saving so they don't relapse and use heroin.
We have Ann on the line from Berks County. Anne, what's your question?
Hi. As a preface, I want to say I'm a several years user of an opioid, and it allows me to function on the very bad days. But thanks to programs like this, I'm very judicious in how I use it, never more than one dose a day and never 2 days in a row. My question is, can there be long-term judicious use of opioids without addiction, and what are the signs of addiction?
Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask Dr. Levine.
So opioids are a medication where the patient will physiologically become dependent upon it. They can become physiologically dependent. They can become psychologically dependent. It is unusual to be able to use opioids sort of on and off, and one day to use it, and then a couple other days not to use it. It can occur, but physiologically people become dependent. Now, certain people are genetically prone in their familial tendencies to then develop the disease of addiction. And it's not their fault, it's a medical illness. And so they can become then addicted to the medicine, and the use can escalate and then go, in some cases, about 5 to 7% of the time from the pain medication to something like heroin. Once someone's addicted to heroin, it usually is overwhelming. Patients who are addicted to heroin lose interest in any other activity. They have medical problems. They have psychiatric problems. And it's very difficult and almost impossible for someone to be addicted to heroin and able to stay functional. So once someone gets to that point, the drug really takes over their lives. But I think everyone has to be cautious about opioids because anyone can become dependent upon them. That's how they work.
Thank you. We have Tanya on the line from Delaware County. Tanya?
Hi, yes. I have a question. Last summer, I do travel a lot, and I ended up intersecting a package that came to my house from the U.S. Post Office, and it was not addressed to me, so I sent it back. Over a course of 2 months, I received several more packages. I then opened one of the packages up and noticed it was prescription drugs in the package. I opened up a second package, and it was the same thing. So I contacted my post office, spoke to the Postmaster General, and explained to him that these packages were coming to my house. They had prescription drugs in them. And only thing I was instructed to do was to flush the pills and that they would flag my address and monitor any additional packages coming in. My worry and concern is that I have a middle school child, and I feel like nothing was done. So what can I do in the future to make sure that this doesn't happen to my house or my home? And if I do receive any packages again, what should I do about it to make sure this is handled properly?
Thank you. I'm going to ask that we've heard about this a lot in the hearings we've had. Barry, you might want to talk about the drug take-back program.
Yeah, first of all, I would not follow the advice given to you about flushing it. That has major implications for water systems, et cetera. You flush them down, that doesn't mean they necessarily go away and don't have any potential impact down the road or in the water stream. I would clearly find the nearest drug take-back box, and they are around police stations. I understand some drug stores are now having them available. The Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, on their website, there is a list of those drop boxes in the area. I would clearly get in touch with the local police department or the county district attorney's office and talk to them about this for further guidance, but also with assistance in disposal of those drugs. But in no way, shape, or form would I ever flush them down or put them in the garbage or anything like that.
And I concur with that. In Delaware County, and I believe you said you were from Delaware County, there is drug drop boxes in every single police station, as well as at the county courthouse, and as well as Riddle Hospital. Other hospitals are following suit, and we collect those drugs ourselves in our criminal investigation division. And speaking of the criminal investigation division, you certainly want to report any suspicious activity involving, whether they be prescription drugs or what you perceive to be illegal drugs, to the district attorney's office or, as said, to your local police department, I would recommend that we then would contact the postal inspector ourselves. We have a great relationship with the postal inspector and get them involved in that type of activity and see if a crime is being committed in your particular case. So please feel free to call us if this happens again, if you're in Delaware County.
Thank you. We have an online question from Madeline. And the question is it true that most of the heroin is coming from Mexico?
Well, we're not sure if it's all coming from Mexico, but South America is a key place for where we're getting heroin. We also believe it's coming from the Asian continent, probably the Middle East, and sometimes China. So it's being manufactured. Many of heroin is being manufactured in clandestine labs. And as we were talking about before we came onto the program, and I'll defer to Dr. Levine, is we also are experiencing, besides heroin, we haven't talked about it in this program, fentanyl, which is a real problem in Pennsylvania and in Delaware County in southeastern Pennsylvania, both cutting fentanyl with heroin and pure fentanyl.
So thank you very much. Fentanyl is a very strong opioid compound. It is actually 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine and can rapidly lead to overdose. And so many of the overdoses that we're seeing in Pennsylvania and really throughout the United States now are very pure heroin, either cut with fentanyl or just, as the district attorney said, pure fentanyl. It highlights the importance of having naloxone available. Through my standing order last year, you can go to a pharmacy and obtain life-saving naloxone. It comes as either a nasal spray or an auto-injector. Many insurance companies will cover it. Medicaid will certainly cover the nasal spray. And if you have a loved one at home that might be abusing heroin or other types of opioids, you can save their life. There's training online. If you go to DDAP's website or our website, it'll direct you to that, and you can get get it from any pharmacy in Pennsylvania. With fentanyl, you'll often need more than one dose to revive the person, but it's a very disturbing trend that we're seeing in Pennsylvania and in other areas of the nation.
We have Sally on the line from Bucks County. Sally, what's your question?
Hello.
Yeah,
hi, thank you for your time tonight. First of all, I want to say I'm very proud of the initiatives being taken in Bucks County to address the heroin epidemic. With that said, my question is in reference to continuum of care with the insurance companies. We don't have as much trouble getting into treatment. There are, of course, you get the no beds available line occasionally too, but it's keeping them in treatment. Studies have shown that a longer treatment time is proven to be more successful in relapse prevention. However, you come up against a brick wall with your insurance company. Is that going to be addressed?
Thank you for your question. This is Senator Yaw. This is a subject that comes up all the time. We hear that the 30-day programs are probably not the most effective way to treat addiction, and that longer periods of time need to be prescribed or need to be the norm. We've talked about the possibility of can we perhaps do modifications of policies where, for example, maybe rather than 30 days every year, we're prescribed or they would provide for 60 days or in a two-year period or 90 days in a three-year period, something like that. Because I think that what we have learned in the Center for Rural Pennsylvania and all of the presentations is there's no question. Longer treatment periods and more intense treatment periods have a much, much better result. And I would defer to Dr. Levine or Jack, anybody that wants to add to that.
Thank you. This is Dr. Rachel Levine. So we would certainly agree that if you're having rehab type of treatment, abstinence-based treatment, that 30 days is unlikely to be successful for opioid use disorder. You know, there are lots of different substances that people abuse, and maybe 30 days is sufficient for some. But for true opioid use disorder, 30 days is often insufficient, and the patient might need 60 or 90 days. Secretary Gary Tennis of the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs is passionate about this issue and talks about it all the time. So we are pleased to, in the administration, work with our legislative colleagues and Senator Yaw and others on how to address this.
We have a Janet on the line from Chester County. Janet, what's your question?
Good evening, everybody. I want to thank the panel again for having this very informative session. As a recovered alcoholic for the past 6 years and a mother of a 16-year-old that had a run-in with marijuana before the age of 14, can you speak to the truths or the non-truths, as it may be, to whether marijuana is a gateway drug to heroin or opioid addiction?
Thank you for your question. I'm going to ask Dr. Levine to address that.
So certainly marijuana in teenagers puts the teenager at risk. So as you pointed out, you know, your child was 14. You know, the brains of teenagers are constantly developing, and taking marijuana on any significant basis during that time is not good for their development. In terms of gateway drugs, it can. So that using alcohol and marijuana can sometimes lead to even more dangerous drugs, such as cocaine or heroin. But what we're finding now, particularly with this heroin crisis, as the senator pointed out earlier in the program, about 80% of people who go to heroin now have actually started with prescription opioids that they've obtained either legally or often obtained illegally from the diversion of the drugs that the senator also mentioned. So that we're finding, particularly with heroin, is that it's actually not through that gateway pathway that might have been done earlier, but it's actually through the prescription drugs. So that's what we're finding now.
We have Amy on the line from Bucks County. Amy, what's your question?
When we were talking about the drug take back, I'm in Bucks County, and I do the drug take back with legal drugs from my parents and such. But when you're faced with having an illegal drug, like heroin, in your hand, you really have no choice but to flush it. And I brought it up in Bucks County. I don't know if they're working towards a way to dispose of that. If you're a parent and you have it, if you call the police, they're going to question. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes sense.
Thank you. We're going to ask the district attorney to address that question, and thanks for your question.
Well, we have come across that, where mom or dad comes across drugs that the son may possess in their backpack or in their gym bag. What I've done in the past is we have, of course, as I mentioned before, the drug task force, we have our criminal investigation division, and we would send them out to the parents' house to retrieve those drugs, and we would not charge the child in that case or the teenager in that particular case. We've also told individuals, if you're going to take illegal drugs and dispose of them into the drug drop boxes, that's okay, as long as you give us a hand and label those drugs. If you could, if you have marijuana, if you could label the marijuana, put it in the drug drop box, we would not. All of those drugs that were taken out of the drop boxes are being incinerated anyway. We generally don't handle them. We take them out of containers. We empty them into another container. We transport them. Recently, for example, in Delaware County, I know in other counties, the Pennsylvania Guard, through the Attorney General's office, is picking them up now from us. And then they're disposing of them, and I believe they're continuing with the incineration. So I would dispose of them that way. We also get questions about needles. We don't recommend needles be placed in those drop boxes, but at the same token, there are, and we handle them.
And we have Mary on the line from Montgomery County. Mary, what's your question?
Hi, yes, thank you for this informative meeting. My concern is, my grandson's a year and a half, and my daughter was opiate addicted, and they had her on Suboxone, and then they changed it to the other medication that you mentioned. And now I was wondering how this – now my daughter's still on this medication under a doctor's care, but I want to know how it will affect my grandson because of this.
What medication? Are you talking about Vivitrol?
Yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you for your question. Dr. Levine.
So I'm assuming that your daughter is not pregnant, because we don't use Vivitrol in pregnancy. But if the grandson is a year and a half, I mean, Vivitrol really wouldn't have any impact. It's a shot every 30 days. And if it helps your daughter stay off heroin, then I think that they would help her as long as she's getting other treatment, and thereby be able to help the family. In terms of breastfeeding, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that question. So you'll have to, if you call us at the Department of Health and ask, ask to speak to either myself or my staff assistant, I will look up about breastfeeding and Vivitrol. I actually don't know off the top of my head, but we'll check it out.
Okay, thank you. We have Kathy on the line from Montgomery County. Kathy, what's your question?
Yes, thank you for answering my question. My two children are Philadelphia police officers, and they're seeing more and more, not that they don't have enough of their own down there, but more and more people coming from the suburbs that are addicted to pain medicine. And then they go, if the pain medicine, they don't sell pills down there, they're too expensive. So you can get heroin for $5 a bag, and it's 90% proof now. So plus, my daughter's in a section called Kensington, and it's just sad because now they're mixing it with fentanyl, like the doctor said, and they can't even, I believe it's called Norcam, I might be pronouncing it wrong, they can't even bring them back, even when they rush them to the Episcopal Hospital. But I think they don't realize, even though they're on pain medicine, once you start heroin, it's very, and I appreciate all the legislation and all the doctors that are trying, but it's just unbelievable down there. And I'm in Montgomery County, and I hope it never happens up here. I don't mean to be negative. And then, like, the first of every month, they all get Social Security, and they don't use it for food. They use it to shoot up. But I just hope people realize when they start taking pain medicine, don't, because the next thing is heroin. Not everyone, but a lot of them get stuck on heroin, and it's 90% proof. And my husband was a police officer and worked for the Attorney General's office. When he was on, it was 50. Now it's 90.
Thank you for your question. We'll try and, I don't know, we can answer the issue about supplying more Narcan.
Yes, so with fentanyl compounds, and there's even a more a stronger substance called carfentanil that we have seen, it's been seen in Ohio, and we have also seen in Pennsylvania. Carfentanil is literally an anesthetic designed for elephants. It is 100 times more powerful than fentanyl. Thus, it's up to 10,000 times more powerful than morphine. And so you're right. When first responders encounter these substances, they have to use multiple doses of naloxone or Narcan, and sometimes it's not successful, and the individuals die. So in different areas of Philadelphia, as it is really throughout the state, it is really a such a significant problem. I have spoken with Dr. Farley, who is the health commissioner in Philadelphia, about treatment, about availability of naloxone, et cetera. So we are coordinating, and I'll defer to the district attorney in terms of law enforcement.
Well, let me first thank you and your sons for their service to the law enforcement community, being two Philadelphia police officers on many occasions. I'm sure they have their hands full. We do have a relationship with Kensington and with the Philadelphia police, where we are aware that people from the suburbs are going to Kensington and Philadelphia, and they're getting their drugs in Kensington, and just some horrible things happening there. The Philly PD has upped their patrols, as you have indicated. They are using naloxone. They're probably using the nasal Narcan version. In Delaware County, for example, all police departments are equipped with naloxone, the nasal Narcan version. In Philadelphia, my understanding, in the Kensington area, they are all carrying nasal Narcan. So they are really working hard to help individuals. Recently, a recovery group from Delaware County went up to Kensington, and they were giving out bags and hand warmers and hats, but also in those bags was information to addicts as to how to get help, where to turn to get help, who's available to give them help, and they seem genuinely concerned about getting help, and hopefully we can work on that with our Philadelphia partners.
We have Jane on the line from Bucks County. Jane, what's your question?
Yes, hello. Hello?
Yes, you're online.
I am a mother of a heroin addict and been in and out of recovery probably about 7 years. Every time is hopeful, though, and every time gets a little bit better. He has been talking about this time getting the shot. Is it the, if he isn't the V, Vatican?
Vivitrol.
Could you just tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, thank you for your question. That's a great question, and I'm going to ask Dr. Levine to address that.
Sure. Vivitrol is a version of a medicine called naltrexone, different than naloxone, and it's a long-acting form. So it's a shot that lasts for a month, for 30 days, and it totally blocks the receptors in the nervous system to opioids. So that if they take an opioid, whether it was an opioid pain medication or something like heroin, it doesn't affect the brain. So it is a way for the person to stay off those drugs and to stay abstinent. It can be very effective. It's best used in combination with counseling and therapy and wraparound services because you really need to have those coping skills. People can stay on Vivitrol for a year and maybe even for several years. Sometimes they can be weaned off the medicine, and sometimes they can't. But it really is not a magic shot, but it can be used very successfully in coordination with other treatment. It is absolutely critical that the patient be completely off all opioids if they're going to get the shot, because otherwise they can go into an instant life-threatening withdrawal if they still have opioids in their system. So what often will happen is the person might be in rehab, make sure that they're completely clean, then they get the shot before they're discharged with counseling and wraparound services arranged right when they leave or maybe into a halfway house, et cetera, and the continuation of the medicine. So I think it's very promising and can be very effective if combined with other treatments.
We have Douglas on the line from Bucks County. Douglas.
Yes. How are you? God, just so you know, there's a little bit of an audio problem that cropped up in the past 20 minutes, but nevertheless, a couple of comments and then a question. I believe marijuana is a gateway drug. I'm an ex-addict, and for years, you know, in high school, it was the pot and all the other drugs, but you know, without the marijuana first, I don't think I would have ever tried some of these other drugs. So that's just a comment, but you see it often. My question regards Suboxone or Subutex buprenorphine.
Okay.
My understanding is that there is still a cap on the number of patients that a doctor can prescribe Subutex to. Is that true, doctor?
So this is...
Thank you.
Dr. Rachel Levine, yes, that is true. So Suboxone, buprenorphine medicines, there are a couple of different brands. Of course, you have to get a physician has to get a special waiver from the DEA to be able to prescribe that. So there's special training of 8 hours to be able to be a buprenorphine or Suboxone provider. For the first year, a physician can have 30 patients. After that, they can have 100. If they meet certain other requirements, they can now have 275 patients. So there are limitations. The new regulation from Health and Human Services increased that cap if you do some other training and other type of work of 275. What we want physicians to do, however, is to make sure that it's quality medication-assisted treatment that's being provided. So that includes prescription of the medicine. There are policies and procedures that the physician has to follow. You have to have drug tests to make sure the patient is taking the medicine as prescribed. And the patient also has to be involved with other types of counseling and wraparound services and other types of treatment to help them with their substance abuse disorder. So I believe that medication-assisted treatment, whether it's with methadone, Suboxone, or buprenorphine, or Vivitrol, can be very effective. The Centers of Excellence are emphasizing that, but it needs to be comprehensive treatment for success and recovery.
Thank you for your question. We have an online question. It deals with when adults leave inpatient care, some go to a recovery house, and is there any chance of getting guidelines for recovery houses in Pennsylvania? I'll answer part of that. We just heard about that recovery houses have little, if any, regulation, and that's something that we might want to look into, or I think that we will look into. And I'd ask Barry from the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. Barry, what?
We've heard concerns about some of the recovery houses. Quite honestly, somebody has categorized them as not much more than a flop house, where somebody opens up a door and sets up some bedrooms for them, and that's about it. And there's no guarantee of monitoring or treatment, counseling services, et cetera. And as we understand it, there is very, very little regulation over them in the Commonwealth currently. So at the Center for Rural Pennsylvania, that is an issue that we are looking at in terms of possibly a hearing, understanding what is the lay of the land in terms of recovery houses, where they're at, how many are there, who does have jurisdiction over them, and what jurisdiction might need to be put in place so that they become a legitimate part of the recovery process. There are some that are doing quite well. I don't mean to suggest that recovery houses themselves are all bad, but we have heard enough comment to question the effectiveness and the regulations governing them.
Thank you. We have Debbie on the line from Lehigh County. Debbie, what's your question?
Yes, I have a son who is going through an addiction disease right now, and I just had a question about forms of treatment. First, he had a seizure, and then he was in the hospital, and they put him on an opiate pain medication. And now, with his parole officer, when they do his go for his blood testing, which he does go to outpatient therapy and goes for his blood testing, they flag him because he has opiate in his system. And at the same time, the courts and, of course, the parole department does not want him on any opiates. Can there be some kind of, like, connection between people? What is the answer for them that they can't have opiate and at the same time, but if they need a pain medication, the hospitals are giving it, but that's going against what they call their form of treatment?
Jack?
I would defer to Dr. Levine in a minute, but I would comment to say that you mentioned that he's on parole, so it's not uncommon for the courts or the probation parole department to put as a condition of probation or parole a requirement that they stay free of any type of drug. Sometimes they're legal drugs or illegal drugs. I think what you would need first and foremost is when the individual is being treated by the physician to tell the physician of his propensity for addiction and his problem that he's having, to make sure his doctor or any doctor is aware of that before they prescribe. Secondly, if it's really needed in his medical care, then we would need to bring that back before probation, parole, and possibly the sentencing judge, so to create an exception for his medical treatment, if that was one of the conditions of probation, parole. But certainly I understand your concern. There's many times people go to the prison and they're on certain prescriptions and the prison will not give them their medication because they just generally will not do that. So special arrangements usually have to be made through the attorney representing your son and through the court system.
This is Dr. Rachel Levine. You know, I don't know your son's medical condition, so it's really very difficult for me to comment specifically about what medicine he should be taking. I can say, seizures are not treated with opioids. So there are various types of anti-seizure medications. Benzodiazepines can be used to treat seizures, but I've never heard of opioids being used to treat seizures. But I really don't know his specific medical condition, but I would agree with the district attorney is that, you know, probably the parole officer and the doctor have to have a conversation. You know, maybe there are alternative medications that could be used, or they need to have a discussion about your son's medical needs and how to make some accommodations if that's at all possible.
Okay. Thank you. We have Nicole on the line from Delaware County. Nicole?
Hi, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
We're fine.
I want to first thank you guys so much for your time and dedication holding this meeting. It was by complete accident that I answered the phone and took the call, and I think it's fate and maybe life-changing. So, again, I thank you. My question is, where would a current addict who is possibly seeking the avenue of maybe going with Suboxone, where would they start? As far as I heard in the beginning of this call, you speaking of the NOPE program, and I was wondering how to get in touch with them possibly, or where I would start to look for doctors or avenues to start in the recovery process.
All right. Thank you. We'll try and provide as much of that information as we can in a short period here.
This is Dr. Rachel Levine. So, you know, it depends what type of treatment the person needs. It also does depend upon what insurance they have. So if they have Medicaid, if you look in the back of the Medicaid card, it'll tell you a phone number to call for substance abuse. For many private insurances, it's the same. If you look at the back of the insurance card, it'll tell you what number to call for substance abuse treatment. Another option is DDAPS, the Department of Drug and Alcohol Program's general number, 1-800 number now. It's 1-800-662-4357. 1-800-662-4357.
And I would add to that, in Delaware County, the single county authority, which is the county-based agency that administers or coordinates our comprehensive drug and alcohol treatment prevention programs, Ann Jennings is a point of contact, and that phone number is 610-713-2365. That would be a great point of entry to find out, regardless of what insurance coverage you may have or may not have.
Thank you. It looks as though our time is up, and this has been a terrific discussion. I'd like to thank our special guest this evening, Pennsylvania's Physician General, Dr. Rachel Levine, Delaware County District Attorney Jack Whalen, and Barry Dank of the Center for Rural Pennsylvania. I also want to thank our sponsors this evening, Senator Pat Brown, Senator Stuart Greenleaf, Senator Tom Killian, Senator Bob Mensch, Senator Tom McGarrigle, Senator Chuck McElhenney, Senator John Rafferty, Senator Tommy Tomlinson. Thank you to everyone who listened in this evening and those who shared opinions and asked questions. If you have any remaining questions or concerns regarding the issue of heroin and opioid addiction, I encourage you to remain on the line to leave a message and someone will follow up with you or visit our website at www.acommonwealthcrisis.com. This website is a great tool to assist Pennsylvanians to talk and learn about the ever-growing heroin and opioid crisis, which is taking the lives of our citizens every day. Thank you again for your participation. Have a great evening.